when you think of Vietnam War films, it's hard not for your mind to go straight to Willem Dafoe, Christ-like, praying for a helicopter to come and save him in Platoon, or Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken playing Russian roulette in The Deer Hunter. And certainly the one that I always think of is the helicopters and the opening credits of Apocalypse Now, with The Doors playing the end and Martin Sheen opening the blinds in Saigon. Because for the most part, we do consider the Vietnam film to be a exclusively American experience, certainly in the context of cinema. And the Vietnam film has been kind of, it's in a kind of war genre of its own, I feel. I recently read David Thompson's brilliant book about the war film, The Fatal Alliance, in which had a chapter dedicated to that kind of very thought. But the film I want to talk to today is a Vietnam film from a slightly different perspective, and that of the French perspective, and obviously the kind of the prelude to the American involvement in the Vietnam War. And it's interesting when you talk about the Vietnam War, because to the Vietnamese, this is a conflict which started in 1947 and roughly ended in 1975. To Western audiences, and I suppose through our understanding of history, we kind of consider it to be from when the Americans involved, when they left in the early 1970s into the war's conclusion in 75. But of course the French were heavily involved in Indochina, and they fought a very long and very costly war against the Viet Minh in the 50s. And the film I'm going to be talking about today wasn't made from the perspective about having some kind of political concern, but it was in fact made through someone's lived experience of the war, made by a man who actually served and had been captured during the First Indochina War. It's a film that predates and in many ways predicts the thematic core of later Vietnam War cinema. It is a stark, relentless, spare, and at times devastatingly brutal film. And that's why today I'm going to be looking at Pierre Schoendoerfer's The 317th Platoon, and I'll explore how this film ties in with his biography, its stripped down documentary style, its approach to colonialism, and how it eerily foreshadows the American experience in Vietnam. Schoendoerfer wasn't a career soldier. In fact, he began as a young Frenchman fascinated by exploration. Post-war France offered limited interest for him in this regard, but the colonies, by contrast, promised adventure, meaning, and escape. So in 1952, he volunteered for the French Army Service Cinematographique, the cinematic unit responsible for documenting the First Indochina War. He wasn't a great propagandist in the traditional sense. The unit's filmmakers were expected to document, to witness, and to create an archive of France's first colonial struggle in Asia. And Schoendoerfer didn't observe from afar. He marched with the infantry, he slept in jungle foxholes, and he filmed from the trenches during firefights. And his lens was often the only record of battle. Everything changed for him in 1954. Schoendoerfer was present at Dien Bien Phu, the decisive siege that ended French colonial rule in Indochina. He filmed until the final days. Then the French lines collapsed, and he was taken prisoner by the Viet Minh. Much of the footage he shot was lost, destroyed during the final days of the siege. That loss, however, shaped him greatly, and he said of the incident, "A cameraman without images is like a soldier without a weapon. The film I lost at Dien Bien Phu is the film I've been trying to remake all my life." His time in captivity also influenced his outlook. He admired the Viet Minh, their discipline, their sacrifice, and he even recognised the tragedy of the conflict. He didn't hate them. In fact, he considered them worthy opponents fighting for their independence. And after he was released, Schoendoerfer turned his wartime experiences into a novel, La 317 Section, and 2 years later adapted it into the titular film. He refused the studio's pressures for spectacle or romance. He wanted the march, the mud, the exhaustion and the fear. And he wanted to be honest about his foe. The 317th Platoon avoided demonising its enemy. The Viet Minh remain largely unseen in the film, yet are always present, an invisible force, constantly threatening and utterly unstoppable. And as the First Indochina War was already becoming a footnote in the French history books, he was even more compelled to keep its memory in the public conscience. And above all, he wanted truth, even if it meant making an uncomfortably quiet, slow, or indeed uncommercial film. Set in 1954, during the final days of the First Indochina War, the 317th Platoon follows a small French-led unit made up of a young French lieutenant, a hardened veteran NCO, and Cambodian auxiliary soldiers as they attempt to retreat through the Cambodian jungle ahead of the advancing Vietnam forces. The story begins when the platoon receives orders to abandon their outpost and link up with French headquarters many miles away. Their commander, Lieutenant Torrens, is inexperienced but earnest, while his second-in-command, Adjutant Wulstorff, is a seasoned Foreign Legion veteran who understands the war's grim reality. The journey becomes a slow descent into exhaustion and attrition. As the platoon's numbers sink, their situation worsens. Communications with headquarters begin to fail, reinforcements and relief never arrive, and hope slowly drains away. Small command decisions take on enormous weight as Torrens and Wulstorff try to navigate impossible choices. Cut off and exhausted, encircled, the platoon makes a final stand, and Torrens' desperate last radio messages go low, largely unanswered. Jacques Perrin plays Lieutenant Torrens, who is a young, idealistic lieutenant. He constantly stops the men from looting and demands that they behave with honour. He's also a rigid disciplinarian, trying to keep the unit together. And Bruno Kremer plays Adjutant Wulstorff, and I think this is actually one of the most underrated performances in war cinema. He is a veteran NCO of the French Foreign Legion, a career soldier who has fought in multiple campaigns. He's deeply stoic, pragmatic, experienced, and quietly paternal toward the men. He represents an old European warrior shaped by decades of empire. His calm competence contrasts with the youthful Torrens, creating the film's central tension between the idealism of the lieutenant and the experiments of Wulstorff. It's also worth mentioning as well that due to his background, we actually found out he fought for the Germans during the Second World War. And I actually understood that I read a book about the French involvement in Indochina, and quite a lot of former German soldiers did actually fight in it, especially as well a lot of former SS soldiers who joined the Foreign Legion as a way of kind of escaping any kind of punishment or judicial proceedings. So there was, I think, quite a there's some pretty horrific accounts really of well, we can imagine what happened when you let former Nazis loose on various French colonies. But the film was made on a tiny budget. The producers initially were pressing Schoendoerfer to make a more commercial film. They wanted bigger action scenes, recognizable stars, and a more triumphant patriotic tone, but he actually refused. He insisted that the film be intimate, unpolished, and as much as possible brutally authentic. And there was really just enough money for the basic equipment, a skeleton crew, and the cast, who were pretty much signed on to suffer, because the film was actually shot in Cambodia, not in a studio or on a controlled backlot. And I think in particular of the British films about the British Empire at the time, especially films like Simba, which apparently were taking place in Kenya, but they never left the studio at Shepperton. And this is the complete opposite of that. This was not when Cambodia was a tourist destination. It was rural, remote, humid, and had barely recovered from the war that they were actually filming. And the jungle itself sort of becomes the film set, and I think one of the character's antagonists, because the crew had to deal with monsoon rain, leeches, overflowing rivers, malfunctioning equipment. The humidity destroyed many of the reels that they'd film, and they were also threatened by various forms of wildlife. And the actors would joke later that the jungle was the strictest director on set. And one of the other things that Schoendoerfer did was he decided to shoot the film in chronological order. And so this meant that as the characters grew tired, so did the actors, and as the uniforms tore and kind of rotted off them, this was actual real wear. And he wanted the kind of the psychological breakdown to be mirrored in the shoot itself. And I think when you watch the film, you can definitely get this sense. There's an authenticity to the scene, because frankly what they were doing is impossible to fake. You cannot not act hot and flustered and exhausted when that's exactly the condition that you are in. And the actors paid, they actually carried military packs stuffed with real gear. There was no kind of empty canteens, you know, not props. They marched through this terrain as the platoon would have marched. They sweated the same sweat and they endured the same exhaustion. And Schoendoerfer wasn't pushing for realism as a gimmick here. He genuinely believed that what they were doing was the truth that they could find to honour those who had died. It was also photographed by Raoul Coulthard, who was a war photographer turned cinematographer. He would later find fame working with Godard and Truffaut, but before that, he was a war photographer in Indochina, and Schoendoerfer and him and he shared a bond. They were brothers in arms almost. Both had seen the war, both had photographed the war, and now they were recreating it. And their unique background, I think, is one of those really great director-cinematographer pairings that I think achieve so much of what the film sets out to do.
Ils installent une mitrailleuse. Faut foutre le corps vite.
Celle-là, je me la paye. Lance patate!
Ici, chef.
Dans cette clairière, au milieu, il y a une petite butte. Vu? Rose 26. Tiens, tire. Arme. Feu!
The 317th Platoon is shot in stark, contrast-heavy black and white. Schoendoerfer and Coulthard could have decided to film in colour. Obviously, it was available by 1965, but he insisted that it be monochrome, and it wasn't because he wanted nostalgia, it wasn't for artifice, it was because he wanted a sense of accuracy, because he felt that black and white represented the photographs of that period and the newsreels that people would have seen, and the imagery soldiers were actually seen in military reports. He felt it was the way in which the conflict existed in people's collective memories. And the camera work is often handheld. You follow the platoon like a journalist embedded in a march. There's even one scene I noticed where the soldiers are all sat down, and as they rise, the camera kind of rises up with them, as if there's a kind of news person there. And it gives the film a kind of a shaky cam, but a sense that you're being present in the film as well as watching it. And it feels, I think, quite intimate as well, the way in which he doesn't tend to cut as much as you would think. He sometimes just physically moves the camera closer to someone who's talking. And if you can kind of compare it to and contrast with kind of the modern war film, which often creates fast cutting to create a sense of urgency, Schoendoerfer actually does the complete opposite. He uses long takes, slow pans, shots where almost nothing is seems to be happening, and lingering moments of waiting, walking and watching. And I think it gets to the point of what war is. It's not all non-stop action. There are hours of boredom, and these are then punctuated by moments of panic. There's also almost no musical score to the film. You just hear what the soldiers are hearing, the water, insects, boots in the mud, the rustling jungle, and the kind of the distant gunfire that you often hear throughout the film. And there's another aspect of it I love, which Coulthard all frames soldiers within wide shots, and the jungle is all domineering, not the men. It shows how vulnerable, how insignificant they are, how isolated they are in this environment. They don't have any control over it whatsoever. They are at its mercy. And another thing that it does is that I don't think it mythologizes the soldiers who it conveys. Often they are shown to be so heroic. Here, I think the style of the film almost does the opposite. There are times when the lieutenant is constantly trying to have to kind of telling people to stop looting or stop taking things. And it's, it almost seems kind of like petty, but it, I think, is part of this dismantling the myth of the war film. And Schoendoerfer actually said that war for him was confusing and exhausting, and I do think that is reflected in the style that he uses in it. One of the most striking images that begins in the film is the French flag, the tricolour, being taken down at the remote base that the platoon are based in. And I think it's emblematic of what this film is dealing with in many regards. Because after World War II, France tried desperately to reassert itself as a global power. The colonies were seen as a way to reclaim prestige lost to German occupation. But this was a different world. Anti-colonial movements were rising, empires were shrinking, and Western domination was weakening. France, however, clung to the belief it could still maintain control in Indochina and later in Algeria. And I think this film is part of that decline, and it captures it on a micro scale, because this platoon is a tiny fragment of a collapsing French empire. Everything about them reflects fragility. Their numbers shrink, their supplies diminish, their radio contacts become unreliable, their confidence fades, their unity begins to fracture, and their authority slightly starts to weaken. And the retreat that they are undertaking is symbolic. It is France retreating from Asia. And it's interesting when you look at the dynamics of the platoon and the colonial hierarchy that's on display, because the platoon consists of French officers, French NCOs, and Cambodian troops. And the hierarchy is clear. The Europeans command, and the indigenous soldiers execute those orders. But the film does complicate this to a regard, because we do see respect between the soldiers, we do see dependence, and their suffering is shared. But you also see unequal burdens and a kind of sense of paternalism and a delusion of French superiority and cracks that begin to form in the colonial system. The Cambodian soldiers are loyal, disciplined and brave, but the film subtly suggests that their loyalty is rooted in obligation, not ideology. They were fighting a war for a country that is not theirs. A war whose goals they don't seem to actually believe in, against an enemy fighting for that country's independence. And this dynamic exposes a kind of moral bankruptcy of the colonial mission and ideal. And there's also something quite outdated about this. The military doctrine, the racial hierarchy and the dreams of empire. They're fighting a war that history has already decided. They just don't seem to know this or have any concept that there is something bigger than themselves happening. And I think it's quite interesting because Schoenhofer never demonises the French. He does love his country. He has stated this many, many times. But he also understood the tragedy of its colonial ambitions. France simply was not the country that it was, much like Britain was as well. And there's so many films that deal with that subject. And these soldiers are being sent to die, upholding a rather kind of doomed notion of nationhood. So in that sense, I think the 317th Platoon is an elegy. It's not a condemnation as such. It doesn't have the cruelty that so many Vietnam films do, certainly when the scenes in which they kind of go into villages and things like that. But I do think it is a lament, as it were. I think there's a recognition that there was this thing called the French Empire, and it was ending, albeit very badly.
Mais qu'est-ce que ça veut dire? Remettez tout ça en place!
Frappez pas ces coudes qui leur a permis de le faire.
Alors vous êtes pour ce pillage. Bravo.
Non, je vais vous expliquer. Ces rombiers nous ont pris pour des Viettes. C'est pour ça qu'ils ont tous foutu le camp. Ils pensent que les Viettes les pillent. C'est pas plus mauvais, non?
Vous êtes très malin, Wiesdorf. Très malin. Eh bien, vos rombiers, ils penseront ce qu'ils voudront, mais on ne touchera rien ici. Vu?
Très bien, très bien. Coute! Fais-moi arranger tout ce bordel!
Pour un lien, tu devrais venir à quelle arène?
Je vais vous raconter une histoire.
I think perhaps the most fascinating character in the film is Adjutant Wilsdorf, played by Jacques Perrin. He is a career soldier, a veteran of multiple colonial campaigns, and a man who has served under the French flag, even though he's not French by birth. He is German, Alsatian, who fought in World War II and then joined the Foreign Legion. And he represents a kind of professional warrior, a survivor and a colonial enforcer, and a man who understands war better than the politics behind it. He's a counterbalance to the film's Lieutenant Torrens, because the two represent two very different views of Europe. Torrens is educated, idealistic, clinging to honour and procedure, and Wilsdorf is pragmatic, hardened and realistic. Wilsdorf knows that the war is lost, that France is retreating, and that the orders they are receiving from above are often completely meaningless. Survival depends on their own ingenuity and flexibility, not the doctrine enforced by the higher-ups. He's learnt this through his experiences of World War II, Indochina, Africa, and we learn at the end of the film as well that he goes to Algeria. He is a man whose entire adult life has been spent fighting for a country increasingly unsure of its own mission in the world. He is weary, but incredibly loyal, even if he is without illusions. And he does, in a small way, represent the fading French Empire. He's worn out, battle-scarred, stubborn, determined, but ultimately doomed by the path that he is on. And I think it's quite interesting as a character, because unlike Torrens, Wilsdorf deeply respects the Cambodian soldiers he's fighting with. He fights with them, not above them, and his bond with them is personal. And it's, I think, born of the hardship that they've all been through. He, I suppose, represents colonialism in a very complex form. He's both violent, exploitative, but also intimately interwoven with the lives of those he commands. He's also, in many respects as well, I think this is almost kind of a cliche of the war film, certainly from many of the ones I've watched. He acts as the film's kind of moral compass. The person who's really in charge, because he is able to understand the reality of the situation. They're not fighting for a victory, they're fighting for their own survival. And this is in part due to the fact that the Viet Minh are fighting for a cause that's way deeper than anything that they have. And he knows that France's time in Indochina is over. It's just simply a case of getting out of the country and getting on to the next war that he'll have to go and fight in. And he does not question, I think it's important to emphasise the fact, he doesn't rebel, he's not shouting at anyone, he's not yelling about the ineptitude of the higher-ups, he doesn't openly question the orders that he's given, he simply does what must be done, and it kind of makes him a semi-tragic figure, because he's a warrior with no war that's actually worth fighting for. I think kind of quite anecdotally as well, when I went to Cuba many, many years ago, I spoke with a Cuban man who had fought in many of their African wars. And although he kind of wore his war ribbons and medals with pride, he was very evasive and sketchy when it came to what he was actually over there doing. Anyone who knows anything about that conflict, it's been kind of sugar-coated over the years that kind of Cuba was on this huge humanitarian mission and so many thousands of doctors and nurses went over there to give aid. It was a colonial imperialistic mission, however. They wanted to bring communism to Africa. They didn't believe in the autonomy of individual states. They wanted Africa to be kind of one big communist bloc. And when he was kind of talking about his experiences, it was always how much he enjoyed being with his friends and the camaraderie, but pushed him on the ideology of it. And he just simply wouldn't talk about it in a way which I thought was honest. You got a few kind of robotic answers. And I think Wilsdorf is very much that kind of a person. You could probably ask him what he was doing in those conflicts, and he would tell you that it was about being with the guys fighting the hard fight. But if you were to ask him what he was actually doing there in the kind of service for his country, I doubt he'd be able to give you a kind of full and coherent answer. Rewatching the 317th Platoon, one of the most, I think, interesting aspects of it is how the film really prefigures the American experience in Vietnam, even though it was released before the US became fully entangled in the conflict. The French War in Indochina was really a preview to what America was going to go through, a foreign army supporting a fragile local government, unfamiliar jungle terrain, an enemy with deep local support, political confusion, moral problems, and a fundamental misunderstanding of the conflict's true nature. And Schrondorfer saw it firsthand, and the film reflects that. You can see it in the way in which the technological superior army is losing to a determined guerrilla movement, young officers clashing with veteran NCOs, a reliance on air support and radios that often completely fails, and a war in which tactical victories mean very, very little strategically and overall, and a growing sense amongst the soldiers of questioning the purpose of their presence in the war. And this is everything that America would face, and the French had already endured it and been through it. And the film had a huge influence on other directors like Oliver Stone, Michael Cimino, Francis Ford Coppola, Stanley Kubrick, all cited or echoed Schrondorfer's work. Stone in particular directly referenced the film when shaping Platoon. And the film feels pathetic because Schrondorfer doesn't portray the war through ideology, he portrayed it through experience, and experience told him colonial wars cannot be won by foreign armies. National liberation movements draw strength from identity and not numbers, and technology cannot substitute for legitimacy, and empires will inevitably in these situations overextend themselves. And America learned these lessons only years of bloodshed, and Schrondorfer already knew them, and this film makes that abundantly clear.
C'est dégueulasse.
Qu'est-ce que ça veut dire, dégueulasse? C'est la guerre. Ils savent la faire, les fumiers. Chapeau. Tu crois que tu pourras te cramponner à mon cou? Parce qu'ils vont venir admirer leur boulot.
Va-t'en, Wislov. Va-t'en.
On va piquer droit dans la jungle. En bas, on sera camouflé. On trouvera bien des bambous pour te faire une civière.
Va-t'en. M'en fous, tu sais.
The final scenes of 317 Platoon really encapsulate everything I feel that this film is about. The platoon are surrounded, their supplies are gone, and morale is breaking, and Torrance attempts a desperate radio contact with headquarters. We see a close-up of his face against with this static-filled radio in the background. The silence between the replies are long and terrifying, and Cotard's lighting makes Torrance look ghost-like, a boy. He hasn't graduated into manhood, he is just a boy leading other men into their deaths, and there's no music, only static breath and distant gunfire. I think this scene really symbolises the collapse of the authority. The radio represents France's chain of command. Its failure represents the collapse of this slice of the empire. It shows his transformation, Torrance's shift from idealistic officer to frightened young man confronting reality. And Wilsdorf emerges as a true leader. He stands behind Torrance, calmly, steady, protective, the veteran supporting the symbolic officer. But also the harsh lessons of colonialism are learned. No help is coming, no reinforcements, no rescue. This is the lonely fate of soldiers who have been abandoned by history. They've obeyed every order, they've marched, fought and endured. And ultimately, for what? The radio provides the answer to this. Absolutely nothing. And it's the emotional core of the film, a quiet, heartbreaking moment that captures the complete unravelling of a colonial power. The film's impact has been enormous, despite its small budget and modest release. It's a blueprint for modern war cinema. It's directly influenced Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now, The Thin Red Line, Hamburger Hill. And it's a very honest portrayal of colonial warfare. Unlike patriotic or propaganda films, it portrays colonial collapse from the inside, empathetically and soberly. And it's a personal testament from Schoedhofer. He knew the soldiers he was trying to depict. He recognised the comrades he had lost, and he knew that this was a war that France was desperately trying to forget. And it's a film also that I think is really important because it has no villains. There's just young officers, NCOs, indigenous troops, and an enemy fighting for independence. There's a moral complexity. You're left to draw your own conclusions as to who is right and who is wrong. But ultimately, it's these young men who are going to be made to suffer. And I think one of the films endures, and certainly by the lights of the film historian Anthony Beaver, said it was the greatest war film ever made. And you can get into that debate as much as you want, but I think the reason for its continuing appeal and the reason why it endures is because it feels so truthful. You don't feel like you're being lectured, you just feel like you're experiencing something with a group of men who have been caught in a moment in history. So in conclusion, the 317th Platoon isn't just a war film, it's a meditation on colonialism, loss, loyalty, exhaustion, and quiet deaths that really very rarely make it into the history books. It was a film made by a man who carried the ghost of Indochina with him for decades, a film about a platoon that never stood a chance, and a film that foretold the American tragedy in Vietnam. It honours the soldiers, both French and Cambodian, who marched into a war that was already lost many years before. And it's a film about men like Wilsdorf, soldiers without a country, warriors without victory, servants of an empire in its final days. And if you haven't seen the film, seek it out. It's definitely deserving, I think, of a wider release. I know Studio Canal have the rights to it, but to my knowledge at the moment, I don't think there's a Blu-ray or a DVD or anything really that's available. I had to do some digging to get hold of it, and I may or may not have had to resort to somewhat illegal means to do that, but hopefully one day it will get a wider release. It's not on Studio Canal's app as well, I've noticed, so I might even email them and see if that can be added, because it's definitely well worth seeking out. That is going to be it for the first season of the 24 Frames Cast. When I had the idea of relaunching this podcast, the idea was I would divide it up into seasons. There'd be a couple of weeks break between them, and this would give me time to sort of plan out what I was going to do and record episodes and make notes and all that kind of thing. And as I've said, life certainly got in the way. My mother died, and I was left caring for my father, or having to make arrangements for his care, and that has been extremely difficult due to his kind of various afflictions. But one thing that happened in the past few weeks was that once I kind of got used to the kind of the massive upheaval in life, I really decided that I was going to refocus my efforts on the podcast. And I now dedicate about 4 hours a day to doing it. And the output of what I've been able to do has increased absolutely massively. I've embraced technology in a way which I haven't done before of the podcast, using things like Waveform on my iPad to make notes, ripping commentaries of discs and listening to them when I go out for walks, and just having time to sit down and really think about what I'm doing. It's also really seen an explosion in how much reading I'm doing about films, how much research I'm doing into episodes. And you may have noticed I've started using soundtracks in the podcast. I've subscribed to Music Bed so I can kind of add a little bit more production value to it. And in short, it has been a real kind of escape from having to deal with other things. And I can highly recommend that there's things you control and things that you can't control, and it's the things you can't control which are often the ones which have you waking up in the morning at God knows what o'clock thinking about them. And I found the tonic is just to throw myself into work like this. It's certainly, when a lot of people who do podcasts, I always sort of think that the person you're ultimately doing it for yourself is you. And I think that's certainly the mentality I'm taking. This is, you know, I hope you enjoy it, but certainly the person who's enjoying it most is me in the process of doing it. So there won't be a 2 week gap between episodes, because I have already got a few written for the next season. So season 2 will begin on Sunday, the 7th of December. Many thanks for listening. If you want to get in contact, email me at 24framescast@gmail.com. I have decided to stay on X. I was going to dump it, but annoyingly, I can sort of see that it might have some benefits if you do just ignore all the other crap on it. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Thomas24FC. And if you want to help the show, you can do so by leaving me a review wherever you listen to podcasts from. So many thanks for listening, and I'll be in contact soon. Bye.